This is Radio Boston. I'm Jamie Bologna. Local reaction continues today after the Taliban's return to power in Afghanistan and the dramatic scenes of Afghans trying to flee as American forces hastily evacuate Kabul. Governor Charlie Baker today said in a statement on Twitter that the Commonwealth is, quote, ready to assist Afghan refugees seeking safety and peace in America. And Baker called the situation in Afghanistan a catastrophe brought on by mismanagement. Here to talk about the latest on the ground and the Biden administration's handling of the withdrawal is Congressman Jake Auchincloss. He represents Massachusetts' 4th District. He served in the Marine Corps, commanding infantry in Helmand Province in 2012, leading combat patrols against the Taliban. Congressman Auchincloss, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be with you again.
So I just want to get your reaction here to what we're seeing now in Afghanistan, something that the governor says is needlessly endangering Americans and our allies.
The administration is winding down a 20-year, $2 trillion war in a country whose moniker is the graveyard of empires. So it was not going to be smooth sailing in this withdrawal. The fundamental point, though, is that this president finally, after two decades, has had the integrity to tell the American people the hard truth that we cannot win a counterinsurgency without a viable political partner in Afghanistan. And the complete collapse of Afghan resistance is a testament to the fact that we never had that partnership.
At the same time, I'm thinking about the fact that you fought there almost a decade ago. And I'm just wondering, in your time in Afghanistan fighting the Taliban, what did you learn about the situation there on the ground then and how it has changed now?
We could win every single battle against the Taliban for the next century. I mean, the U.S. military would clean the clock of the Taliban in every firefight, and we'd still lose the war because counterinsurgency, unlike counterterrorism, counterinsurgency is a political problem with a military dimension. Now, we had the military dimension, but we never had the overarching political endgame. To do that, you have to counter the insurgents, and you have to counter the insurgents with competent governance that can provide basic services, rule of law, a civil society in which all individuals can flourish. And instead of trying to plant those seeds in fertile soil over the last two decades, Afghan senior leadership lined their own pockets and devolved into corruption and incompetence.
But if we knew that in 2012, should we never have gone in before then, or should we have gotten out much sooner than we did now?
The mission in Afghanistan began as a counterterrorism mission. And President Bush was very clear about this, actually, in the months following 9/11. It was to deny a base of operations to terrorists who had the imminent capability and will to strike the U.S. homeland. And it was to bring to justice the architects of 9/11. Now, the counterterrorism mission in Afghanistan has actually been largely successful. Osama bin Laden, of course, is dead, and there have been no attacks against the U.S. homeland in the last 20 years. But under Bush and Rumsfeld and Cheney in particular, that CT mission, narrowly scoped and military in nature, was allowed to mutate into a counterinsurgency boondoggle. And that should never have been allowed to happen. In situation room after situation room, for 20 years now, smarter people than me have looked around the table and said, we can't win this thing. We can't win a counterinsurgency. And yet, it took President Biden and his integrity to finally pull the plug on it.
Okay, so let's hear President Biden. He stood firm on his decision to pull the plug on it, as you describe it. Here he is speaking yesterday from the East Room of the White House.
I stand squarely behind my decision. After 20 years, I've learned the hard way that there was never a good time to withdraw U.S. forces. That's why we're still there.
So, Congressman Auchincloss, does that mean that the last four administrations have not been entirely upfront with the American people on exactly what the mission was there after the counterinsurgency mission?
That's exactly what it means.
And yet we've been hearing since the early 2000s, we're almost there. We're leaving. We're you know, leaving strong institutions. We're leaving a self-sufficient army. Was there dishonesty coming from the Obama administration, the Trump administration, the Bush administration?
One of the most powerful flaws in human decision-making and in group decision-making is sunk cost bias. This fallacy that we've already invested so much. Just give us a little bit more time, more troops, more time, more treasure. We'll get it done, because nobody wants to turn the lights off. Nobody wants to be the commander in chief that provides over a withdrawal. And yet we saw that sunk cost bias governed the Afghan counterinsurgency campaign for 20 years. And really, I want to underscore why that's such a testament to the presidential decision-making of Joe Biden, is that he pushed to the side these powerful human biases and thought like a president should think in the Situation Room.
At the same time, Congressman, I'm aware that the president said as recently as July 8th that, quote, the likelihood that there's going to be the Taliban overrunning everything and owning the whole country is highly unlikely. Of course, that's exactly what happened.
A Taliban takeover of Afghanistan was one of the scenarios mapped out for the president as he made his decision. It was not an inevitability, but it was a possibility. What is clear is that Afghan security forces were even more demoralized and even less well-resourced by central leadership than even U.S. intelligence agencies had forecast. We put $80+ billion behind Afghan Army and Air Force resourcing and training, $80 billion. And yet Afghan Central Command couldn't get bullets and rations to the front lines when the Taliban were advancing. That was not a money problem. That was a corruption problem. If you were a frontline soldier and you knew that your commanders were lining their own pockets instead of getting you what you needed to fight the Taliban, would you stay there and fight? Absolutely not. In combat, it's leadership that holds the line, and Afghan leaders really fell down.
But Congressman, shouldn't the intelligence officials, the military officials, known that before this week?
Again, a Taliban takeover was one of the scenarios mapped out for the president. I think more important than the horsepower of the Taliban in advancing, more important than the lack of American firepower, is the lack of Afghan willpower.
You know, Congressman, let's talk about loss, because in thinking about Afghan willpower, I'm also thinking of the many Afghan citizens who've lost their lives, and also the American service men and women who've lost their lives. And so I'm just wondering if maybe to get a little intimate for a second here, but what do you say to a person who lost a loved one or suffered a terrible injury or someone who's had to flee from Afghanistan?
A 20-year effort in a nation as complicated as Afghanistan cannot be broken down into just a simple win or loss. To say that no progress was made is, I think, an unnuanced perspective on the last 20 years. A generation of girls went to school. A generation of women voted and participated in political life for the first time. How much of that progress is sustained, especially in the Kabul capital region, is going to be one of the hallmark questions of the coming months and years. But progress was made. And again, the counterterrorism element of the Afghan mission has been successful. There have been no attacks on the U.S. homeland emanating from Afghanistan. We brought the architects of 9/11 to justice. Just because a tightly scoped, well-understood mission was allowed to mutate into a boondoggle of a counterinsurgency does not mean that all of the sacrifice was completely in vain. Things are more complicated than that.
Sure. Of course, yesterday on our show, we spoke with Worcester sisters Fadia and Farouk Kohistani. They both came to the U.S. with their family. They were relatively young. They've both since graduated college. One went to Brown, one went to BC, and they're working in tech. And here's what they had to say about the sort of real human impact of what's going on.
It's the idea that for the past 20 years we've been, or 20 years or so, we've been feeding hopes and dreams to young women and young girls in Afghanistan that, hey, you too can get an education. You too can do what you want to do in this world and make a difference. Just to take all that away in a matter of days is absolutely devastating.
So again, sort of reiterating what you were just saying, of it was 20 years of young girls, women in Afghanistan being able to get an education, being promised that tomorrow would be better, and then to have that taken away in a matter of days. What do you say to them?
it's my fervent hope as well that seeds once planted cannot be totally uprooted, not even by the Taliban.
Just a hope. Okay. Congressman, I also want to ask you about the failures and corruption within the Afghan government, which you mentioned earlier. It's hard to watch these images of Afghans clinging to American helicopters, leaving their country, or crying in the street. Is there a responsibility on behalf of the U.S. government, on behalf of the U.S. people, to the civilians there, regardless of who serves in their government?
The United States has maintained control, or has gained control, of the international airport, is resuming both commercial and military evacuations, between 5,000 to 9,000 a day through at least August 31st. We are going to prioritize evacuating our Afghan allies who are at special risk of Taliban reprisal, whether because they served as interpreters or contractors, or were prominent advocates for the rights of women and girls, or were journalists. The State Department and the Defense Department are working in concert to expedite these evacuations, and they have the full support of Congress in doing so.
Is there anything being done here in Massachusetts right now, either in refugee efforts or aid, to support Afghans seeking help or asylum? What are you and your colleagues in Congress working on?
Governor Baker, in his comments yesterday, made clear that Massachusetts is open to refugees, and I am strongly in accord with that. We, as a Commonwealth and as a nation, are immeasurably enriched, both culturally and economically, by welcoming those who are seeking a better life for themselves.
And what comes next for the region, for America's involvement or lack thereof now in Afghanistan? What would you like to see President Biden and the military do next?
The immediate mission, of course, is the evacuations. The sustained mission will be an over-the-horizon counterterrorism capability. What that means is no terrorists with the will and capability to strike the U.S. homeland can be allowed a base of operations anywhere in Central Asia. Obviously, Afghanistan would be the prime spot. And in our briefings with the administration in the coming weeks, that'll be a line of questioning that I'll pursue vigorously, is to understand what is the status now of Al-Qaeda in the region.
So, Congressman, just in closing, I do wonder if you could reflect with us for a moment here about your time in Afghanistan and just how you're thinking back on your service, on fighting the Taliban and now seeing them in power.
Well, nobody wants to see the Taliban in power. The Afghans nor the Americans want to see them in power. But I'm not thinking of the Taliban right now. I'm thinking of the villagers with whom I worked when we were patrolling the villages, and I'm thinking of the interpreters who were attached to my platoon. I'm thinking of the kids that we used to give our rations to and our water to. I'm struck, as all Americans are, by thinking about what future they're going to have. And it's a future that we cannot architect for them from half a world away. It's a future that they're going to need to wrest control over themselves. And we'll partner with them as best we can.
And are you hearing from any of those folks, now? Are you hearing from your comrades, your brothers and sisters in arms, and your other friends that you met there in Afghanistan?
My district office has been helping to process visas and provide other constituent services as best we can for references that are coming our way. Yeah.
And finally, Congressman, thank you for your time today. I'm wondering what lesson you think we can all learn from this 20-year war, this engagement, the lives lost, and now this regime change in Afghanistan.
Well, I'd like to think we've learned our lesson as a country to not wage wars of choice, but I try to be a student of history. And so something tells me that there's going to be a Bush-like president at some point in my lifetime who is once again going to bombast and bluster his way towards a failed conflict. And whether or not I'm a member of Congress, I'll be standing up in objection to it.
Well, that's Congressman Jake Auchincloss. He represents the Massachusetts 4th Congressional District, served in the Marine Corps in Afghanistan in 2012. Congressman Auchincloss, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.